Hi, welcome to Re-Evolution. I'm Rhino.
And I am Maurice, and this is our Revolution review show and podcast.
Yeah, we're going to start each week with questions. Well, we're going to start now with questions. Jump right in. We saw Rachel's journal. What is in that journal? What's that drawing of? Is it collider?
Definitely looks similar to a collider.
Somebody with engineering, tell us what that was. Or is that super space tech sci-fi stuff that we don't know what it is? But yeah, that's question number one. Question number two, how long has Rachel been with Bass? It's obviously been years, but yeah. Just how long has it been? Because if he's been there a while, why are these questions just now being asked?
We didn't get an age on young, middle-aged Charlie, I guess. I don't know how to say it, because we've seen little girl Charlie. We didn't get a specific age. Was she like 10, 12, what?
Third question I've got is, Captain Tom kind of jumped out at me while saying to Danny, you can glower at me all you want, like you're sucking on a lemon. Has Danny ever had a lemon? I mean, tropical fruits are kind of going to go by the wayside if food's hard to come by.
Yeah.
So if he's never had a lemon, maybe that phrase was lost on him. And what fruits would you be able to have where you live? Like, are there fruits that grow naturally around where you live? Could you have those? That kind of stuff. Final question I've got today is, what was the connection to The Wizard of Oz? Because we have the book, The Wizard of Oz, and shown and mentioned a couple times. Mm-hmm. We saw some connections in the episode, but we want to see what y'all and hear what y'all have to say about, as far as, were there character allegories? Was it a plot allegory? Just an idea.
Yeah, there's a lot of references to The Wizard of Oz in my opinion.
You got any questions for him?
I don't. I'm sorry. I usually lean on your questions since you go pretty detailed. Something that I have laid out as far as the format of the episodes, I was talking to Rhino about this, and I mentioned the product placement every time, but it seems like it actually is part of the way they lay out the episode, as far as there is either pop culture reference or some form of big branded thing in almost every episode. This episode, it seemed like it was Wizard of Oz. I don't really remember what the logo was that we saw last episode, but I know that the very first episode was the AC/DC.
Well, last episode we had Apple with the iPhone.
Yeah, you actually saw the Apple symbol. Okay. And you've seen Apple products throughout the show. In this one, we actually saw a MacBook when Maggie is on talking with their kids. So.
All right, but that does it for our questions. We'll give you some contact info a little bit later, but hit us up. Let us know what you think about those questions. Give us some answers. Give us some ideas. Anything you want to do. Right now, we're going to jump to the high points, which is our recap, basically. We basically just hit on the high points of each episode. We don't go into too much detail as far as the little things, but we try to give you the main plot points. This episode starts with Charlie on the run. It starts in action. We find out what Danny's destination is, where Captain Tom Noble's taking Danny. It's Noblesville, which is not the destination of our other friends, the Fellowship, that's getting back together in Lowell, Indiana.
And why Lowell, Indiana?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Why go to Lowell? I mean, did
Miles know that Lowell was pretty much abandoned, or was it just, okay, Lowell, Indiana is a big spot on the map for this area of the country. It's a great place to meet up. It's something that interested me more once they actually got there.
And we found out they got there 15 days after they split up.
Yeah.
Because it was one day after the 2 weeks exactly, blah, blah, blah. But when we're there, we get a really nice flashback to Maggie's past. And we see Seattle at sunset. She's getting ready for something. She's talking to her kids in England when the power goes out, when the blackout happens. We see where she was, which I think is something we'll probably see a lot more of with characters, is where were you when the blackout happened?
Yeah.
But in Seattle, the only thing that bugged me about that was, I think there's a time discrepancy there. I'm not real good with time zones, but pretty sure Seattle's about 8 or 9 hours behind.
Sorry, I just tweeted the link to the show.
Forgot to turn my phone off.
But I'm glad I didn't think it worked.
But anyway, Seattle's 8 or 9 hours behind London, I think, pretty sure. I did the math with my phone. No, but it just seemed like those kids were really late to talk to their mom, which I guess would happen. But whatever. From that perspective, we have Maggie seeing Charlie again. And you see that for the first time, that true motherly love that she has for Charlie and Danny. That's explained later on in the episode.
Yeah.
From that point, we get dogs. That was my next note, was dogs. And we had a couple different ideas about that.
When they're first introduced to us, we actually have this very strong suggestion of the philosophy that once man falls, those animals that are immediately subservient to man no longer have that fear of people anymore. I mean, like, yeah, there's dogs that attack people now, but most of us know that if it's a domesticated dog and it's not being commanded to attack you, that honestly, if you're pretty stern with an animal that has an owner and you look them in the eye and you're like, you know, you command them around and you know how to deal with that, most dogs will listen to you. Whereas these dogs, you know, look like they want to eat everybody.
A little survival tip for everyone out there. If you're watching this and you have a dog come at you, make eye contact, that's one, and punch it in the nose, that's two. Very simple. Most dogs, if you hit them in the nose and you're making eye contact, they'll leave you alone.
Yeah. I did make a big note about that whenever they ran. I was like, really, we just ran? But that's where we feel like they were really suggesting the psychology of fallen man.
Well, that and Miles had a look on his face like he's seen something bad with dogs before. He's seen something go wrong. And that was the other topic I was trying to think of earlier when we discussed this before we started, was with dogs, you look at different dangers, or you look at dangers in a different light in this blackout apocalypse. Because certain things that aren't dangerous now, and we'll get to that a little bit later with tetanus, certain dangers now that are simply fixed might be a big deal. So a dog bite might be a lot bigger deal then than it is now. After that, we have Danny and Captain Tom again, which is becoming one of my favorite tandems because of the dynamic they have there. Danny really hates Tom, but Tom seems to respect or at least trust Danny's opinion on certain things because we have the, well, it says we need to stop with the whole tornado coming.
Yeah, and they actually did. You're a good point.
And they actually did find a stopping place.
Yeah.
But that was really cool. We jumped from that to Bass and Rachel talking, and Bass is interrogating Rachel once again. And we find out that Ben's cover story was he's an algebra teacher, which, from pop culture, I don't know. I don't have personal experience with anybody from the DOD, but I'm pretty sure they all have cover stories for what they do. Because they just can't tell everybody, hey, I work for the Department of Defense. But he had all kinds of clearance, according to Bass, and he was working for him. So is Rachel playing the card of, well, I was the wife, I didn't know?
It seems like she
fed
really
me the cover story the whole time. I'm just as betrayed as you are. I don't know. Anyways, from there, we jump back to the Fellowship, as I'm going to call them, because that was when I was making notes during the episode, the first time watching through. When they got back together in Lowell, I was like, we finally have our Fellowship together, which later on is going to be kind of funny. But,
well,
not funny, morbidly funny. Not even really funny, just morbid. Anyways, Miles wants to leave. He's second-guessing himself. He really... he doesn't understand, I guess, his own feelings as far as why he's doing certain things. Because there are a couple examples of Miles really isn't, pardon my French, an asshole.
Yeah. It's really interesting to me that as much of a John Wayne fan as Rhino is, until this moment, I didn't have the connection between Miles' character in this episode and John Wayne and the Searchers. But I feel like there's a direct connection of outside of the family, outside of the circle, in the background, always wanting to leave, and then that young character that he has to protect is what keeps him there. So, yeah, I just wanted to throw that in.
John Wayne-ing me. No, But he wants to leave, and we get that whole scene with him and Charlie where it's kind of awkward. But I don't know. Because we find out that he's not an asshole because he actually listened to what Maggie had to say later on. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But if he were really a cold-blooded killer that didn't care about anything, if he didn't care about anything, then he wouldn't have listened to Maggie. He would have just go away. But he listened to what she had to say. But that's a little bit later on. After we find out that Miles wants to leave, we get this Charlie zoning out and going into a flashback. And the one big note that I had for that flashback, it was very well done, but the girl they picked to play young Charlie, spot on. She looks like Tracy Spiridaccos.
Yeah.
She acts like Tracy Spiridaccos. I think it must be a sister or something. Or they just did a really good job casting.
I think it was a really good job casting. I think that little girl did a great job with the scene. There is that side, and not to discredit you, but the one thing you always remember as an artist or you're brought back to is if you do a little bit really good and you never have a chance to show people more, everybody immediately is like, wow, you're great at acting, you're great at whatever. Think about the guy that can play one song on guitar and plays it and then just leaves. Everybody's like, oh wow, he can play guitar, he's awesome. Well, in reality, he might have only been able to play the one song, but if he doesn't tell you and out himself, everybody thinks you're awesome. So she does have that on her side as well. I'm not trying to discredit her. That's something that also as an artist and an actor and musician I thought of in the moment. I was like, I really want to say she's awesome. Then again, we really kind of bash the acting that we get from Charlie as Charlie in different ways by really nitpicking her. And it's because we have so much to nitpick from because she is in every episode for most of every episode. So...
Yeah. Charlie does kind of get on our nerves a little bit, but I understand where you're coming from, and it's very journalistic of you. You're giving both sides of it. I like it. From there, we don't really get a whole lot until we get to Maggie's flashback again, and we see Maggie walking the country, going from Seattle all the way to Buffalo, New York, and she's told in Montana, before she walks all the way to Buffalo, that she can get to England from there, which, not to toot her own horn, but we talked about England, we talked about steamboats and ships.
Yep,
we talked about all that stuff last week, and it happened in this one. So yep. We're going to try it again this week with a bold prediction. But the fact that England might as well be the moon, according to the
guy. Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. Like he said, you're never going to get there. Trying to get to England is like trying to get to the moon, which was, I thought, yeah, we've done both of those, so why are we giving up?
Well, but I mean, she traveled for years. She says that. She spent years looking for a way to get back to England, and the guy talked about a war where the steamboats were destroyed and all the tall ships were broken down for lumber, which I guess makes sense because we probably hadn't gotten back into the agrarian society of two guys and a big saw lumberjacking and stuff, but it was cool to see the perspective of you can't get over there. It seems so close now for us, but it's might as well be the moon for them. After that, the next big thing I have is Maggie talking to Miles, like I was talking about earlier. If Miles really were a dick, he would not have listened to what Maggie had to say. And Maggie was talking about how Charlie and Danny saved her from herself because Ben was there for her when she had given up hope. She realized her kids were probably dead and they died wanting their mother, and she was very dark about it. And the TV show does a good job of not being dark, but showing us the dark sides of this world.
Yeah.
That we're viewing into. But talking to Miles, you see Miles kind of take a pause and let it sink in a little bit. But the quote that really stuck out to me was the beginning of that conversation was, "That makes you a murderer, right? Maybe even one of the great ones." Very poignant way of putting it.
Yeah.
Because what do you consider a great murderer?
Hitler.
Is Miles Hitler?
I felt like that's what they were trying to say. I felt like,
Stalin killed more people than Hitler, though?
I don't know. I mean, Vladimir Palin, man, I don't know.
Yeah.
know, like, I feel like all of those are people that came to mind with that type of thing.
True. The other scene was with her pouring the poison out on the beach, or not the beach, but next to the water in Wisconsin with Ben. That was a very well done scene.
It was very well done. Sorry to jump in though. Something that I thought of. It's smart that they paralleled, so that we don't feel like Ben was disloyal to his wife. They paralleled her leaving in the past with when he meets the other woman that, you know, became the mother of his kids, in the same episode. So it's interesting they did that, which means the only other way to have done it would have been to just have the leaving in this episode and later have, you know, her backstory. But Maggie's backstory. But we did not actually get to see the kids because they're kind of our time reference for how much they've grown for how long it has been. And so he references that he's with his kids and he's out, you know, camping, whatever. But
yeah, we've got a campfire over there with more food than we can eat.
But he doesn't, I don't know, it doesn't give us any actual reference for how long it has been from that day when Rachel was taken. Right. You know? And his assumption, it does seem like what we said back at the very beginning, that if somebody from your family leaves or is taken or whatever, your assumption after months is they're dead and gone.
Well, here's another question for you, though. Did he know Rachel was going to Miles? I don't think he did. I think he thought she was going on to get supplies or something, and that was a little hidden agenda for her.
Maybe.
That's my thoughts on it.
Okay.
But from there, we go back to Captain Tom and Danny, and we have Super Tom coming out of nowhere after Danny escapes.
Yeah.
Danny escape plan number two was much better. But it lasted a lot less, or it was a much shorter escape, because as soon as he gets outside,
he like looks left and looks right and he gets speared in the face.
Here comes Captain Tom, just ready to tackle his butt. But it goes back to the whole following orders. Captain Tom really doesn't have anything against Danny. He's just following orders.
Yeah.
So instead of knocking the crap out of him, he picks him up, gets him in the shelter.
Right,
got to keep him alive because he's already killed his dad. He needs help.
And that was a major Wizard of Oz moment right there. He had the
tornado
going on, and then let's get down in the cellar type thing. And so yeah, I've literally wrote a note of, can Danny please get sucked up into Oz? That would make this episode so much more interesting.
Now, I really like the conversation that they have, and it flashes back and forth to that one, but we're just gonna act like that's all one big scene. Of Captain Tom and Danny in the shelter there. He wants to be civil. He makes the reference to sucking on a lemon. And you have the amen moment and then the crash where the whole thing falls down on Captain Tom.
Mm-hmm.
You made the comment about his use of the term cold-blooded murder earlier before we started talking about this. And I see it as Captain Tom is very manipulative. He understands how people work, and he knows what buttons to push. So it's self-preservation, but it's also a little bit of calculation in there with his word choice and the way he does it to get Danny to help him.
Yeah, I mean, my statement in our discussion before we started recording was that cold-blooded, or killing somebody in cold blood, seems to be used a lot in shows and movies and such, at least lately. I mean, I know it's an old term. I feel like because it's used so often by bad guys to manipulate the good guy into saying, are you going to kill me in cold blood? Or to question the morals of a good character, are you going to kill this person in cold blood? That what we end up getting is this distorted picture of, well, anytime you kill anybody, it's in cold blood. And the statements I went through, or the way I wrote it out in the moment when that was asked, I was like, this man, you know, came to your town, killed your father, took you away as a captive prisoner, and had you chained up until recently. Killing him is not killing him in cold blood.
It is still murder.
Okay.
Walking up those steps and letting him die would still be murder.
I mean, you have the difference in a war crime and a, like that's...
Man, it's not an act of war.
Oh. You were just a prisoner of a militia.
True.
Just saying, like, How much more active? It might not be an actual war overall, but war on the individual, yes.
I would say. Yeah, Captain Tom and Danny is one of my favorite dynamics, like I said. But him saving Captain Tom right at the nick of time, which was, that was like the thing of the episode. Right at the nick of time. The arrow, right at the nick of time. The chair, right at the nick of time.
Okay.
No, but saving him and then immediately chicken winging Danny.
Yeah,
and putting him in there and getting him done. That's why I thought he was just being manipulative and captured.
True, yeah.
Was because it was that one beat of, holy crap, I'm alive. All right, back to following orders. Yep. But from there, we get the Aaron surgery on Maggie because Maggie got stabbed by the dog guy thing in the Carnival of Doom. It was great part of the episode, but there wasn't a whole lot to it. It's the suspense of Maggie being stabbed and bleeding out. Versus Miles trying to be the hero, and then Charlie gets kidnapped.
Yeah, I mean, there were certain things about it that were rather predictable. Charlie got kidnapped, the release of the...
Didn't see that part coming.
I might not... Okay, I'll be honest. I might not have seen that coming, but once it did happen, it seemed like the episode flowed in a standard pattern, which is not terrible. But, you know, like, the...
You had that one moment that if there's any character in danger, you're going to see that one moment where it was the doorknob.
Yeah.
Where they show Miles grab the doorknob.
Oh, they did.
Jump straight in.
They did like that with, like, what, how many doors? Yeah. Like, he went through, like, four doorways. I was like, all right, fine. Who cares?
I like the booby trapping, though.
Yeah.
Just make it go all over the room to pull the trigger.
Yep.
That way, even if you break the doorknob off, you're still going to go through that room and it's going to kill somebody. Anyways, but when she was kidnapped, her kidnapper, did we ever find out the name of the kidnapper or just his daughter's name? Quote-unquote daughter.
I don't remember.
I say quote-unquote daughter because of the way he acted towards Charlie.
Yeah, he was kind of a little...
little perky.
Yeah, a little perky.
But, I mean, he's... I don't know. Anyways... But the point I wanted to get to with that was his daughter, Lila, quote-unquote, was killed, and he rationalizes it by saying she was basically killed by the looters.
Because
they took his medicine, and she got tetanus by stepping on a rusty nail, which goes back to another thing we discussed last week of diseases.
Yep.
Tetanus, if you're unfamiliar with tetanus and lockjaw, don't Google it. Don't look it up. It's the most horrifying and terrifying. I would rather burn to death than have tetanus.
Okay, wow.
Because at least burning, you're going to go into shock and die. Tetanus, every muscle in your body cramps up and locks up. Mm-hmm. That is, it's so bad that it breaks your own bones. Your own muscles break your own bones.
Yeah.
That's a horrifying way to die. And that's another example of they give you a little bit of the darkness of the world.
Yeah, but he didn't go into detail about how gross it was.
He talked about how she was dying of thirst right in front of him. It's because if you can't move your jaw because it's locked, you can't drink. You're going to die. I mean, the neti pot through the nose to try to drink, but how long can you live like that?
Oh my gosh, it's gross.
Exactly. But that was showing the depravity or what he has dealt with and what he's seen. And it kind of rationalizes where he is as a person, but still. Kidnapping her and then saying you can't trust anybody and putting duct tape on her mouth just because somebody's trying to save her. It's like he's lost touch with that, well, people can still care for you thing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's the bad guy. It's supposed to happen. From there, I made a note about how they are really trying to make you not hate Nate.
The one thing that I've said thus far with the show, I feel like it might be a bad thing, is we don't have very strong good and evil in this.
You don't have the white hat and the black hat.
Right. You have certain things, like you have people who are in opposition to your protagonists, and you have shifty characters who are sort of good, but, you know, chaotic or neutral almost in how good they are, as opposed to just purely good. And we don't have a just, I guess, except for Bass at this point. Bass is the only character that we are pretty much painting across the board as pure evil, except for in his flashback.
Exactly. I was about to say, because we had the 6 months after flashback where he was the voice of reason for Miles.
And that's what I said, but that episode really threw me off, because even still, this is, we already know, he already has the, you know, narcissistic tattoo on his arm at this point. He's already known for being Monroe. So how much of that was just in that moment of that episode and that flashback for us to feel like, okay, he's the voice of reason, when in reality, he was following Miles because Miles got a phone call right before, and so I'm going to act like his best friend until I can get the details.
Yeah, there's a reason Miles was the second in command to Bass.
Yeah.
Well, I think we'll find that out at some point, but if Miles came up with the idea that Bass is the one that came up with is the leader of the militia in the Republic, something happened there. Miles either said, okay, you've taken it too far, I'll still be with you, or Miles finally went, okay, look, I came up with the idea, but you're a better leader, or something like that. I don't know how it's going to happen, but we're going to have to see that at some point.
Yeah,
I think that's going to be something we'll see in the first season. I don't think they're going to hedge their bets a whole lot with the first season. We're going to get a lot of info and a lot of action in this first season, because nowadays with TV shows, you're not guaranteed that second season. Well, right. that's been true forever, but...
Speaking of which, we've only, allegedly, and I read a thing about it earlier, this show has only been signed on for 13 episodes by NBC. They only paid for 13 episodes thus far. So...
I hope we don't have another Terra Nova on our hands.
Or Firefly.
I still understand how Firefly has not come back on.
I don't know.
So many people love this show. Anyways, but the fellowship thing that I said earlier, we get that finally with Maggie is bleeding out. We've had the surgery, and she understands she's lost too much blood.
She acted it well. I mean, the look on her face when she got stabbed, all the way through the process, the euphoric kind of going out. I felt like she did really well with that scene. It really brought you into the emotion of it. Just like you said, like that, especially partnered with the flashbacks of who she was as a mother and caring for Charlie, and her and Charlie having a moment where Charlie finally connects with her.
Exactly.
Didn't seem overly sappy, didn't seem overly girly, or just, this is stupid.
It was because they used sport language, buddy language. You're going to get some of your own medicine instead of, I love you, please don't leave me. But yeah, we finally see her, and she's come to terms with death. Probably while she was just sitting there.
Yeah.
Because she's happy, she's reliving the time with her children, and she's slipping into a better place. And I don't have a problem with that. That was a very tough scene to watch, but it was very well done. What I had a problem with, and you had the same problem, I thought it was funny, is Charlie's need to be the center of attention, it seems. Everyone leaves me.
Everybody leaves me. I actually wrote the line in quotes after she said it. Watching the scene, both of us have said that we watched it and we were drawn in by the emotion. We were actually right there with the characters. And then all of a sudden, Charlie goes for one of her three phases, which I will explain in a minute. The third phase, which is, I'm a girl who will cry about everything. And she says, everybody leaves me in this, like... this very childish... Well, I don't know. I feel like...
I understand she's grieving. It's tough. But writers, come on. We get it. You don't have to spoon feed it to us.
Okay. Also, just to jump back to... He referenced Terra Nova a minute ago. Terra Nova ended up getting canceled. And part of the problem was... there were episodes and parts of the episodes that geared towards the actual adult audience that was watching the show that late at night. And then there were parts of the episodes that were geared towards 13 to like 17-year-old girls. And that's great and all,
like that,
but NBC is going to cancel your show if you don't step it up. Your show is at a 9/10 o'clock spot. If you don't step it up and write this show on a level that, I mean, like, there was no part of Lost that when we watched Lost that we would have been like, yeah, a 13-year-old girl would be sitting here going, oh, that's exactly me and my boyfriend right now, to some moment. There are parts of this show and there were parts of Terra Nova that were that way, and it's what got Terra Nova canceled. Our friend, one of my friends, Jim, is a huge dinosaur fan and was glad that Terra Nova happened. And he actually said that he's watched some of the behind-the-scenes stuff and the director's stuff and the notes. And he's like, they got, from CBS, they were told, like, you know, up the quality of the writing, stop pushing for this younger audience, and, like, stop, like, half doing episodes that feel like they're for adults, but then also have this undertone to kids. Like, just write to the adults. And if kids watch it, they watch it. But have it be gritty and real.
Because that was one thing about... I remember one of the Terra Nova episodes when he tries to get his daughter to go through a tunnel to save him.
Yeah.
And he has this whole, like, go away spider song he has to sing. That was for adults. That was very well done. Because you have kids. You have to do silly little things to get the kids to do things. That made sense. The whole daughter falling in love with the soldier thing. Weird. Whatever.
But anyway, so back to the show we're actually watching right now.
I was talking about the Fellowship and how the Fellowship got together. We have our Boromir.
Yeah, direct.
Maggie died.
Yeah.
And her death, I think, will be the inspiration for the rest of them to continue, because her death solidified to Miles that Charlie can save him. And I say save, because he doesn't need saving. But he saved his soul, basically. It's his chance at redemption. Which I think makes sense. After that, I've only got two more notes. We have Bass interrogating Rachel again with his one question that turns into like eight. I just had one question. Sorry. Another question. Sorry. Another question. I mean, it's what it seemed like to me.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's obviously a little off his rocker. So, that makes sense. And then, the very end, the big reveal, the mystery box for this episode is Rachel was leaving her kids to meet Miles.
Yeah.
And we don't know why. Well, sure, we'll figure that out. We don't get anything from Miles besides a silent demeanor that doesn't look like he's really wanting to go through with what he's having to do. And he's almost embarrassed to the point of not saying anything. He just nods her over.
Yeah. I didn't feel like it was embarrassment. I guess embarrassment is a way to reference the same feeling, but I wrote a note that said about that moment, well, at least Miles didn't look happy about what he was doing, and it came across to me like, this is what has to be done, so I'm doing what has to be done, you know, for the betterment of society or for the situation or whatever. We were even saying, you know, there has to be something that happened that explains why Bass is number one and why Miles was number two. And even at that time, there's just so many details that we don't know about that 15-year span. And
we're in episode four, though.
Yeah.
We're going to get there, and I'm excited. I'm still excited. This has been a great show so far. And the last episode was a little light, but this episode wouldn't have been as good without that last episode.
True.
Nora hasn't really done a whole lot.
No, Nora...
But I see her moving forward as a character. We got rid of the... I don't want to beat a dead dog, but the attractive, but not nearly as attractive, British chick, and we have Nora.
Yeah, okay.
And you lose one, you gain another... And it's, you're losing a doctor, but you're gaining explosives. So it's less of the, we gotta save everyone, more of the, we gotta blow stuff up.
It was interesting that that's something you, I think was important to bring up, that we did just lose the doctor character. And the commodity of certain things, like people who are doctors, or who have special skills and stuff like that. Skills are something that I've been talked about a lot in this. I'm going to kind of take the floor a little. So, for this episode, like, since I'm already on skills, we actually got to see that apparently Danny has some skills with weather. There was thunder, but he says, didn't you feel the shift in the air? And he knew something really bad was going to happen, which we jokingly, since we're Lost fans, made a reference to. He's one with the island.
Danny is Locke. Break his back and shave his head.
Give him a suitcase full of nuts.
Exactly. And an orange for Smile.
Okay. So, but Danny had those skills, and different people almost are referenced by the skills that they have, or what skills they did have in the previous world. I mean, you have Aaron is Google guy. You have Miles as this military leader who's good at killing and very tactically smart. You have Nate, who's apparently a good tracker and who's just a general, a good scout-style soldier. You have, you know, our explosives expert. We've got a doctor. We've got Charlie and her tracking and archery.
Yeah, the two kids are the wild cards, I think, because they've been brought up in this society.
Yeah.
They have all the skills that you need in this society and none of the skills that you don't need. They can't type.
Right.
But they can go to deer, probably. Which...
The things I've also been thinking about this week, though, are, like, who can actually read and write? We would assume that Charlie and Danny can read and write, but it'll be interesting to maybe find somebody else. Maybe Nate can't or can. You don't know. He seems educated, but you don't know. And then... Because he would have been in the same age range growing up with, you know, most of his life being in the blackout. Who can ride a bike? I mean, I feel like there's a random point that somebody could find. I'm just saying.
Physics went haywire. Bikes don't work.
I want that biker gang, and I want a joking biker gang. I want some random goofballs maybe on, like, actual...
With 50s greaser hair and leather jackets? Switchblades?
I don't know. I'm just saying.
A little West Side Story with a bicycle?
Whatever. All right, so let me
grease lightning on a bicycle.
Very beginning of the episode, we did get militia meat. Now, what I mean by this is we had canned food products showing up, and they had the M on them for Monroe, and it's
Dharma food.
Yeah, it was the Dharma food, exactly.
We can draw so many connections to Lost. Lost and Forrest Gump are two things you can draw connections to almost anything.
Well, you have another... We talked about the Apple products, and we did get the iPhone again in this one. We actually got to see the MacBook used for its webcam and the live chat. It's FaceTime, I guess, is what we're going to assume she was using. They could have flat out used it, I guess, if this show's sponsored by Apple.
I called it Skyping, but then again, that's kind of like Band-Aids.
Yeah.
Not all Band-Aids are Band-Aid brand, but that's what they call them. I call anything, if it's on the internet and it's video, it's Skype.
Something Rhino did not touch on is whenever they meet up in Lowell, Indiana, you have Nora's, all right, this is who we showed up to, you know, these are the reinforcements that we needed. These were the droids we were looking for. And Aaron has another one of his real-life nerd moments, like little kid being bullied on the playground of life, and he stops and he says, "We're right here." And you just said that in front of me. I really want something to happen and Aaron to just have actual ridiculous engineering skills or something, because he's intelligent. Like, there's something else. I mean, if he's a programmer, there's got to be something else, whether it was just a hobby... I just feel that to be true, because I know very few nerds on that level of intelligence. The man was an executive for Google. I'm just saying, he's not your run-of-the-mill, like, oh, well, I was a good programmer, lower-level idiot who worked for some random county or whatever. But, you know.
I don't know. I see him as being one of those kind of guys that he keeps it all close to the vest. He understands that the more you show off or the more you show that you can do,
yeah,
the more people will want you. And the more people will try to abuse you or use you.
True.
But the fact that he did the surgery says a lot, that he's willing to do what has to be done.
Yeah.
Him standing there screaming for Charlie instead of going after her seemed a bit cowardly to me. But, again, with the Hurley...
Yeah.
Hurley wouldn't go chasing after somebody. Hurley would go get somebody to chase after him.
Yeah. And he's even right on that. Aaron is very much like the Hurley character in Lost, with the fact that he's the team player, though. If we're all here as a team and we're all running to go kill that person, Hurley's not going to run away. Mm-hmm. Hurley's going to run with us.
Hurley's going to run over a guy with a van.
True.
That's what Hurley's going to do.
True.
Hurley killed Mr. Friendly with a van.
To jump back in to...
We keep going to different TV shows.
Really?
I want to make my bold prediction.
Okay, go ahead and make
my bold prediction this week. It's not very bold because you can read into what they say in the beginning. The militias rose up with an S, plural. But I think we're going to see another militia. I don't know if we're going to get like the full-out battle lines drawn, civil war volleys back and forth between the militias. But
it is really interesting.
I think we'll see another one.
It is really interesting that we have the parallel, and I'm me right here always bringing up native cultures. The thing that was said, the reason why a lot of Native Americans, the American Indian, was viewed as such a savage, aside from the fact that, you know, that we, the European white perspective coming over, was just, oh, everybody we meet anywhere we go is already savage.
Yeah, if you're darker than me, you're savage.
I know, but the other thing was said historically is that they didn't fight fair, because you had the battle lines drawn on a field. You actually went out and it was volleys of fire versus fire and fire, and then you choose to do certain things that grew out of the Middle Ages with archers and became part of the gunman age. So the thing, though, that I always like to bring up the native cultures is they didn't fight that way. You were okay, like a tree is okay to use as cover, and we've developed into that in modern society with urban warfare, and yet it went, like, it's just interesting that that went away with the militia tactics of, you know, stand in line, fire.
Well, it comes from the idea of it's very easy to train someone to do a few things.
Okay.
But to train a soldier to fight in a modern fighting sense, the guerrilla fighting sense, they have to have survival skills, they have to have weapon skills, they have to
have bow staff skills, computer hacking skills.
You got to have all these skills. You have to be James Bond to be a super soldier nowadays. Whereas with the militia, you can train a guy, all right, here's how you reload this gun. Here's how you fire this gun. Here's how you stand here and shoot the gun.
Yeah.
All I want you to do is march behind that guy. When we tell you to line up, keep reloading your gun and shooting it.
Okay.
It's the KISS method. You keep it simple for the IQ 75 guy that can go over there and just keep shooting that gun over and over. And he's the lucky one that never gets hit. So he's going to be at the end of the line right there shooting. And I mean, that was the Civil War tactics, because you look at the average IQ of farm boy that joined the military didn't really understand strategery.
Kind of brings us back to the whole statement of what do different people know. You know, like, in this day and age, okay. So I guess my bold prediction on the normal run-of-the-mill story side of things, and this is really off the wall and weird, but I feel like we're either going to get in just story. This is not like I said, this is really off the wall and weird, but I feel like we're going to have amazement with a mundane thing, whether it's some character that has a magic trick that they can do, or they get to a city and the city is being manipulated by a guy that's using religion against everybody or whatever, but he's really performing what a modern day we look at and go, well, that's just magnets, like making something float or whatever, you know? Because
magnets.
Because we are... Yeah, exactly. Man, no. Because we are so...
conditioned.
We're so conditioned to... I mean, think about it. If you saw a guy riding around on a unicycle, even, that would just be amazing to Charlie, because she's never seen that. Who knows if she had seen... Like, if we'd actually got a little more of a Joker moment in the theme park, with the guy actually having face paint and stuff, how much more freaked out would she have been? Because that... Like, that freaks us out, because it's a little weird, but it's not so... like left field for us, because we've seen scary movies and theme parks, and I can reference the Joker. Like, you know, she doesn't have any of that. I feel like we're gonna get some moment where an episode, it might be a bottle episode sort of, where we get like a town that they have to help or whatever on their way that has nothing to do with anything else, or maybe it's a character that comes in, or maybe Aaron randomly in the next episode makes a card float between his fingers because he uses a piece of string, and it's amusement, you know. But I think we're gonna get that whole reference to magic or something like that with, you know, use of
simple illusion.
Simple illusion. That's my prediction.
So we've got.
Like I said, it might be off the wall, but it's like I said, the whole skill of riding a bike is even foreign, probably, to Charlie. How it works might be foreign to her. Whereas Aaron or Miles probably. Maybe that could be something that happens. It's used in a fight. That still would be out of my means, you know. But they use a skill that is something totally mundane for modern culture, modern society. you know, riding a bike. I mean, I think swimming probably would be known to Charlie. She would know how to swim, but, like, I don't know. I don't know what other ones I can throw in there. They'll come to me over time, but...
Yeah. Well, that's about all we've got for today. I hope y'all have enjoyed it. Again, just want to reiterate, we're two guys that are excited about NBC's series Revolution. We're doing this for us. We're doing this for y'all. We want y'all to contact us. So here's our contact information real quick. You can contact us at Re-Evolution Show on Twitter. We are facebook.com/Re-Evolution Show. We are on Tumblr, reevolution-show.tumblr.com. And you can email us in our Gmail box, which is reevolutionshow@gmail.com. Basically, anything you see with revolution, add another E, put show on the end of it, that's us. Find us on iTunes, subscribe to our podcast. We're getting better at that. I'm in charge of that. And I think the third episode was the best so far. I've got high hopes for this one because I'm finally understanding what the heck to do in GarageBand. It should be very simple to me, but I was just like, how do you do that again? Anyways. But yeah, contact us. Anything you got, Maurice?
No, that's all I've got.
Well, thanks for being with us today. We'll see y'all next week after the next episode. Y'all have a good one.
See you.